The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Now your host, Roger Waldron.
Today, my guest on Off the Shelf is Bill Gormley. Bill is the president of the Gormley Group, and also he is currently the chairman of the Coalition for Government Procurement. And it's, you know, our quarterly discussion on all things procurement with Bill. Get that update, or maybe it's biannual, Bill. I don't want to give you more FaceTime or radio airtime than is necessary. But yeah, it's our biannual sort of look at where we are in procurement. Just an update on what's going on out there, current events, and also following up on, you know, events that took place a while ago and represented major initiatives that the government's had. So, but first, Bill, welcome to the show. It's a beautiful day.
Roger, it is not snowing outside.
What do you mean?
It's 60-some degrees.
I know. It's unbelievable, isn't it?
And here we are inside.
Right.
Yes. I gotcha. But looking forward to it, as always.
So let's just start with one that I find fascinating over the years, a government initiative that dates back to Dan Gordon's time at OFPP when he issued the Mythbusters memo, and then there was a follow-up memo, and at one point there was talk of let's do a third one, there's been a lot of emphasis at fairly high levels about communication with government, between government industry, and Anne Rung actually has, you know, continued that theme through her recent memo in December, talking about, you know, having folks focus on specific industries and specific sectors and that sort of thing and engaging conversations. So I guess let's just talk about Mythbusters. Has it made a difference? And where are we in the state government industry communication?
Roger, I just...
That's a compound question, but that's
okay.
Yeah,
that's why I'm going to give you a compound answer, thought.
Yes or no?
I'm going to do it. Yeah,
it's maybe.
You know, it's interesting when we, from a listener standpoint, and that are the acquisition, you know, commercial side that's listening to your show here, you know, to tell someone that they need to talk to a partner. I don't care whether it's a business partner or anybody that's considered a partner in order for you to be successful. You know, I think we always kind of feel that's a little interesting, but to Dan's credit, he put out that Mythbuster, maybe we'll call it an icebreaker, okay?
Icebreaker memo.
Yeah. Right? Like, hey, let's talk, right? And it was great. I mean, but every OFP administrator sits in, to your point, has to piggyback this. And so let's continue to give everybody credit that they're keeping it in front of government employees as well as industry. And I think the challenge is you've heard me say this before, but I always say in an academic world, everything works.
Right, because it's all in the blackboard, right?
It's all right there on the board, man. You connect all the dots. You know. But in an organizational, you know, in a live, you know, organization, you know, or in this case, from an industry standpoint in its relationships with the government, you know, you're moving from the academia side to the operational, to the implementation side. And, you know, there has continued to be a drop off. I mean, we're not really, at least on my side, I'm not really seeing any sea change of a difference. So we can say, okay, you know, no one really expected a sea change.
Mm-hmm.
But I think when the government now in some of its attempts to simplify acquisition, says that we want to hear from you. I really don't think they've demonstrated, and we can probably get into this more during the course of the show here, they haven't really demonstrated that they're listening to the feedback. I think it's still the mentality, and very unfortunate, the mentality of if industry is not in agreement, then whatever the change is affecting their bottom line or profitability. So from that standpoint, that means the government must be doing something right.
Right. It's placing motives on people's recommendations about, you know, profit line that really aren't, that's not what people are focusing on. You know, obviously companies want to make money, right, Bill? But it's like, how do you make it easier for us to compete to be able to win that business? And, you know, what's most effective way for us to be able to perform this contract? You know,
I think the idea, to your point, I think the idea is how do you simple, this is not a difficult process. It is not a difficult process. Everybody knows what the overall objective is of the government's requirement. And I think by virtue of not making it keeping it simple, the market will put more pressure on industry to provide a government the best deal than the government regulating the best. I don't know. We don't want to. Are we going to talk about? Maybe we'll talk about your wage and price controls at some point here.
Oh, we will talk about that at some point. Transactional data reporting, wage. Yeah. But complexity, to your point, complexity I think distorts the market, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's like how much is this going to cost us to play? And we don't know if we're going to really have an opportunity to win it. I mean, and everybody has that risk. I mean, that's normal course of business decision making, and I mean, everybody's used to that. But I think what's different behind this is that someone can come and put a badge in front of you as a government contractor, which is not the case commercially. So when you're not in compliance with something, or you infer you're not, I think, and not every action comes to that, don't take me wrong, but I really think that one should think about the whole idea of collecting data, which it just seems to be the overall consensus of thought now in government.
Right.
And it's not, how do we simplify this to get the government a better deal? And and I hope
we'll talk about that a little bit more as we go along. We'll peel back that onion. But
there you go.
But still, like, back on, communication, what's your view on, the increasing role of social media in, especially like GSA is probably one of the leaders in it. Let's arguably say they're using their Interact site, and I think it's very good for pushing out information. Does it enhance the dialogue? What do you think?
Well, I think it checks the box. I give, GSA a check on their, when they have an interest of putting something out, they do a pretty good job of that. I think what's the objective of pushing it out? Is it to get feedback? And then once they get the feedback, are they checking that box of, hey, we should consider some of these recommendations? I'm not gonna say I have to consider everything,
right?
But if you're really putting an undue burden or an undue risk or anything that's just an unknown part when you make a change, really creates confusion, and basically for all parties, both from a customer, who industry, particularly in the schedules program, as the industry is GSA Salesforce.
Right.
And sometimes that's not recognized to the extent it should be. And there's that partnership again.
Right. And I think part of the partnership too, even if you disagree, or if there's a rationale why something that was recommended was not adopted, I think one of the frustrations that I hear, I wonder what you think, is that there's no real explanation as to why a decision was made a particular way. If someone makes a recommendation, say, no, we're not going to do that. That's sort of the end of the conversation versus, well, are there other alternatives, or we considered that, but this is why we can't do it. I mean, I don't think that's part of that trust and that dialogue back and forth.
Yeah. And I think we all know, you can talk every point to death. Okay. But I think there's a way to group feedback, at least to demonstrate that you read it and you considered it, and group your response or something. But and I think everybody recognizes that everybody's not going to get everything they want. I think the scale, the axis point is tipped that GSA or the government is pretty much saying they're putting it out there for comment, but we're going to get what we want. And I think there may be other ways of really getting better results, to be fair here.
Sure.
If there was more collaboration and the willingness to concede that there's maybe a different way of doing a change and ultimately get a better deal for the customer, for the taxpayer, and for all parties concerned.
Right. What do you think of the role, last question on communication, the role of like ombudsman at GSA or like industry liaison, some of the, the acquisition centers at GSA are putting in place?
Yeah, I think the only one that's really done an ombudsman, I think, is the IT center. I think, that's for one that's really out there, and it's been very, very, I've heard very positive things about it.
Yep.
I think.
Absolutely.
I think part of the reason for that is the commissioner put a memo out that management is not to intervene in a contracting officer's negotiation. Not that we wouldn't disagree with that, but it's been taken so literal that is now.
That goes back to the IG report, right?
Okay, I think. Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You brought that up, the IG report, and so I think that's where there's the balance now of who has the keys, who has the steering wheel, and who's locking up the passenger seatbelt. I mean, you got to have someone in charge here, and I think. I think the keys and the driver should be the same.
Right, right. And the irony is most of the managers are probably warranted contracting officers themselves. But that's a whole subject for another. And talk about beating something to death and talking it to death. We did Mythbusters for a whole segment, Bill. Unbelievable. So, final verdict on communication. Better, same, move in the right direction.
I think communication, if you stand back and look, probably there's more communication.
But less listening.
But right. Yeah, people, there's no change. There's less change as a result of listening.
Right. Okay. Right now, we do have to take our break. My guest today is Bill Gormley. He is the president of the Gormley Group and chairman of the Coalition for Government Procurement. And you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Bill Gormley. Bill is the president of the Gormley Group, chairman of the Coalition for Government Procurement. And Bill, we talked to death Mythbusters in the last segment. And I think, one of the, when you're talking about current events and government procurement, or buzzwords in government procurement, where, the buzzwords of the day are category management or spend under management. So I'm just going to open it up and your thoughts on that. What is it first? Do you know what it is?
That's a great question here. I think it's an umbrella term, and you talk about spend management. I think it's also has under category management now strategic sourcing. I think there's, it's what is it? And it's a term that's taken a life on of its own here. And I think,
rename the Federal Strategic Sourcing Leadership Council, the Category Management Leadership Council. I think something like that.
Yeah, that's
happened.
Right. I think we read the same, right. We probably saw the same article. Yeah. So, it's another form of strategic sourcing. You want to call it that. That's
right.
Fine. That's,
sure.
It's, the things we talk about here, I think they're all ideas with great intentions. I mean, no one's going to argue how that GSA in this case or the federal government is trying to reduce its spend because it's looking to have a smaller budget. So by nature of that, they're trying to get more out of it. Everybody gets that, whether it's our household or whether it's anything, and so. It's a normal process everyone goes through. Where can we look to do a better job and pay less and even be better? So that's fine. But I think that this takes on to harness all of government, or the idea of harness all of government acquisition, by industry segment or by category management. I think, there's a lot of internal, what I learned in being in government, there's a lot of internal support systems within the acquisition community in government. Their own, you can call them homegrown, you can call them, commercial off the shelf. And yet when one tries to put together a hallway of acquisition, I know several departments haven't even been contacted yet to have this discussion on what's going to happen to their procurement vehicles. And they consider that a major change for them. And so, granted, someone's got to put their neck out and be a leader. We can talk about all that, and all of the attacks you can take from it. It's still necessary to, I think, educate people and to bring people in. Both, we've talked about the industry side, but you get your customer side here. That I think this gets back to the Mythbuster over the umbrella term here. But category management, this is a big deal. And I think what we don't want to have is confusion that's going to lead the customer and to industry on any changes that are really going to disrupt the investments that they have, where they can't see a a better return, and this is on both parties.
And right. Training, so they got a part of the challenge is explaining how this is going to improve performance over time.
Training has to be a big part internal. Right. It has to be. And training's always ends up getting cut, and no one always has time to train because they're overworked in 1102 or the procurement series. So, and everybody can talk about e-training, and, you know, I've seen people take their CPAs online, all that stuff, and they're walking away, and the person's there talking, doing a webinar. So, you know, you got, I think nothing beats face-to-face. I know that's kind of counterintuitive right now because everybody wants to do e-training. That's fine. But you get into this, I think you really do need some role-playing, and it's good. It's healthy education and a developmental experience for the people. And the government's a big place to train.
Right. You know, category management at the government level where they have, agency leads who are sort of supposed to be the facilitators. I mean, it's an interesting concept. You know, there's so many details to be worked out to your point. And to your point, how is this going to improve things? That's part of the challenge, right, that they face in terms of rolling this out. How is this going to make things better? For the people who have made those investments that you talked about.
Exactly. Right? So I think part of the category management senior advisors under category management by department, and I think we got to look and see what is their background. You know, or is everybody sitting around saying, hey, that's a good idea, and let's go for it. And
right.
Then, you know, someone puts out a number, this is what we're going to save. Oh, my God, let's go for it. Those are... Heck, I'd do the same thing. But I think you got to recognize, okay, someone needs to say, okay, I hear all this, but let's take it off the chalkboard, use your earlier term, and let's get into the operational side. And let's talk to some companies with all sizes of company. And I got to tell you, a lot of this stuff, while it's, you know, people view large business as, hey, they can afford anything and they can do it at a heartbeat. You know, they have organizational challenges just like the federal government does. Maybe we'll get into that at some point. But on the small business side, you can call them more agile. This places a heavy burden on them, a very heavy burden. And I think the administration would want to know that.
Sure.
If they're doing something that's occurring, a heavy load for small businesses.
Right. So, and what about, so you have it on the sort of enterprise-wide level, cross-government, GSA, and the Federal Acquisition Service has reorganized, I guess, around category management. And is that sort of, as someone who worked there for too long to say, right, Bill, back in the day, was GSA organized at one point around sort of industry sectors or not?
Exactly.
Can you talk a little bit about your experience with that,
exactly,
that model?
I mean, just our experience, I'm going to put time on this that someone will say, well, we can beat it. But it takes about, when you make these changes, you know, we were set up from an industry standpoint, whether it's automotive, as furniture, you know, office supplies, you know, consulting, hardware stores, things that there's still a lot of that around. But I think the key here is, you know, you do have to have some commodity or service specialization. If you're expecting to deliver, you know, a kind of a well-defined acquisition machine, then you have to have the wherewithal behind it. And there, when we made changes, it normally took, before we saw market changes from a customer, it took, you know, Roger, on average, a minimum of 3.5 to 4 years. And then people would always, you know, say, hey, Gormley, why is this taking so long? And that's, you know, so what we found out over time is that, you know, a lot of our customers had multi-year procurements that they were obligated to.
Right.
And so in order for them, first off, they wanted whatever we were doing to pass the litmus test that, hey, you're going to be around for a while, and we're not just jumping from one thing to another to give the customers, hey, they have their mission to carry out, right?
Right.
And so, and plus contractually, they're obligated. So there's a lot of logistics within the acquisition community, or a lot of processes that has to change, both from a system standpoint, from a training perspective, and also from am I getting a better deal in using whatever this new system is versus what I'm doing today.
Right.
So all those thought processes have to go through at every single level.
Right. And is a marketing message that has to be right. You got to educate part of that. That's like the education piece in part too. It's like, Here's what we're doing. This is how it benefits you.
I mean, maybe GSA's, maybe this is going to be, hopefully this is part of their plan. They, and marketing's a great point. marketing is really training from a government's perspective. And so when you're showing what's coming down the road, you're basically training them. Some people may view it as marketing, but you're basically training these people with new information. And it's like technical marketing, if you want to call it that, but it's really training. And that's how we viewed it. And I think I'm sure JSA has an IFF that can support it.
From training,
And you know, so it's a matter of our someone may be saying, can we take the, someone may say, why are we doing this? And then you have to have a position. Hey, because we're changing government and we're educating. Right. So I think to your point, marketing should definitely
On the note about marketing, we do have to take our next break, Bill. When we come back, we'll be talking more to Bill Gormley. He's the president of the Gormley Group and chairman of the Coalition for Government Procurement. And you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Bill Gormley. Bill is the chairman of the Coalition for Government Procurement. He is also the president of the Gormley Group. And Bill, the next topic I think we wanted to sort of get an update on, or where we are right now, just sort of, I guess, take the temperature of, is contract duplication, one of our favorite topics, and actually one of the number one issues that I still hear from companies across the sector, the ever-continuing issue of contracts for the same or similar products and services. And so where are we on contract duplication in federal government?
We're the bottom line.
You want me to repeat the question?
I don't want you to duplicate the question.
Right,
all right, I'm sorry.
You got
too much. I'm with you here. You know what? It seems like, particularly on the large programs, the on the GWAC side, OFPP put a policy in place years ago, as I'm sure the listeners know and the procurement people know, that everything has to go in front of them, acquisition plan, they review it, and they have to approve it or, disapprove it, obviously. And nobody has disapproved, that I'm aware of, any of these plans. So, and I've talked to some other people, we're not seeing the number of contracts go down, period. And so—
Right, and I've heard anecdotally that the numbers are actually going up.
And they could, So, I mean, it's not like a hockey stick, but it's not— going up, but it's increasing. To your point, I'm not seeing it, go down at all. So it's somewhere, people can listen to this and say, well, where is it? Well, it's somewhere in between. I don't think the government knows,
right?
But it's not going down. And I think that's the, I don't know. I'm just trying to figure out, why is it with the things that we've talked about earlier, and that's where the government's trying to reduce costs. This point is just glazed over. It's not even part of the discussion,
Right.
And I think that's where, there is a significant opportunity on the part of the government, because it's not only duplication of contract, it's duplication of resources. In other words, you're having resources that are scarce in the contracting community. A lot of people are making the case for that, and yet they're duplicating contract actions that they could piggyback off, as we know, the schedules program. That was the intent of it.
Yeah, or the ITGWAX or whatever, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's the intent of it. So that's, so why are we out there having to do our own thing, so to speak? And I think that's where this is totally controlled by the government. Industry has nothing to do with it. I'm sorry, Roger. I don't want to get emotional over this.
That's okay. So, but Bill, in response, folks would say to you, well, industry bids on all these things. What's your response to that?
All due respect to the people saying that shows a lack of understanding of the market. And what I mean by that is, if that individual or those individuals were put in a position in a company, they would do the same thing, because they can't afford not to bid, because it may take off with a lot of business, and that business is siphoning it off somewhere else, and it may be siphoning it off on the other side of my company. So right. this cuts both ways. At the end of the day, this is a government independent decision.
Right. Well, and to your point about the business case analysis has to be done for the big contracts that are multi-agency or enterprise-wide agencies. Anne Rong has indicated in her December 4th memo that they're going to take another look at that process and make changes. I think that is a recognition of the of the fact that this remains a big challenge. I think that's a positive thing, right?
Well, they put it out there. So I think her stepping forward now really puts her in a limelight. So she has an opportunity now to kind of walk the talk here of government looking at how much contract duplication there should be or shouldn't be. And I think this is, you know, she's taking that step. She's out there. So now, well, she has the opportunity to make that independent decision.
Right. So, and we're not, you're not talking about going down to like one contract vehicle. There's a right mix.
No. Yeah. Okay. I mean, put it this way, the government can operate better with less contracts. How's that?
That's very good, Bill.
Oh, yeah. It's almost like something I can go on a trail and talk about.
Right. Hey, so with regard to contract duplication, I know, the GSA schedules, which you worked on when you were at GSA and, re-engineered at one point. Are there areas there where there's opportunities to reduce contract duplication? I know, and we've talked about it on the show before, but, to your point about they're not going down, well, some things haven't been done either, right, with regard to the GSA schedules.
Yeah, I think one thing that would help Anne Rung in her decision-making process or her objective to reduce the number of contracts is to really provide the leadership role working with GSA to incorporate ODCs in the schedules program. And I know the... I probably should know this answer, but I got to ask you this. Now, how long have you been with the coalition?
I'll be 5 years in November.
So 5 years. If I remember right, this was one of the early...
All right, are you interviewing me now? What's the story?
I think you would enjoy that.
Yeah. Okay.
That's a nice day.
All right.
So I think, it's important for the listeners to recognize that, when you first came in, this was one of your key items, having come, not too distantly from when you came to the coalition from government and working in operations from a lawyer standpoint. ODCs was a key saver of really adding continuous value to the schedules program.
Right, right. Well, yes, to your point, Bill, it was the very first issue that that was brought to my attention when I joined the coalition as something that needed to be addressed. Really the ODCs, when we talk about it for the listeners, that's the ability to add materials at cost, other direct costs, and an indirect cost to schedule orders, particularly complex service requirements where additional items are needed, the flexibility to provide those at the order level consistent with been existing for almost a decade now, FAR clauses that have not been incorporated in the GSA schedules program. That was the issue that was brought to me, and I know your next question is, how far have we gotten on that issue, right? It's okay, so I'll answer it for you. I'm interviewing myself. But the answer to that is nothing has been accomplished. There was one public notice where, information was provided. I think that was now well over a year ago.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
definitely.
Fall of 2013, maybe that came. I don't care remember when it came out, but one public notice on it, no action to actually, authorize, activate, provide instructions for the use of standard FAR clauses for commercial item contracting on the largest commercial item contracting program in the federal government.
Well, this is where Anne Rung has the opportunity to be acquisition rock star, all right? Because there is no one in the private sector that takes on the scope to do business from a commercial standpoint that doesn't have some form of ODC in it.
And sure.
Because these many requirements are unknown. I mean, the objective is understood, but getting to that objective, there's a lot of things that occur and that's where ODCs come into play. It's not a hidden cost that people know about. It's the ability to host an unknown cost along the way to keep the project or program moving forward on change. That's basically what this is.
Right.
Yeah. And so 5 years at least for evaluation purposes, and I know the former administrator says, we're going to get this done. You had a GSA business roundtable a couple years ago. This was brought up, was the number one voted item. He's like, we're definitely going to do this. It is somewhere.
It's disconnected.
It's parked somewhere.
Right.
It's in a parking lot somewhere of an idea. So we got to put a new battery in it start it up and drive it over to OFPP and go over and run with it again. Right. How's that?
Okay. Thanks, Phil. I like all your car analogies. You're the car guy. But right now, we do have to take our next break. My guest today is Bill Gormley. He's the president of the Gormley Group and chairman of the Coalition for Government Procurement. And you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Bill Gormley. Bill is the chairman of the Coalition for Government Procurement. He is also the president of the Gormley Group. And Bill, we're talking about current events, what's going on. And I guess the biggest sort of news in the GSA world right now is the proposed rule issued in the GSAR with regard to reporting transactional data and the role of the price reduction clause. And I wanted to give you an opportunity to talk about what the heck is that?
It's probably a good question. What the heck is it? I think this is an attempt to, it's an example, I think, of trying to meet many objectives.
So you say it was written by committee, huh?
I think this was written by more than a committee.
Right.
So, here again, this is kind of like the, from an academia standpoint and an operational standpoint. And so here the government wants to essentially collect data, sales data. Nothing new. I mean, when I was in government, people said, hey, let's collect sales data. And I'm like, it sounds good, but what are we going to do with it? And obviously there's newer systems today. But that doesn't take away from what is the government going to do with it? And I'm sure they got software that's going to be. I think they're looking at a software and at the data elements of the software is now how they're asking for the data from industry. And you're getting into I'm saying it's proprietary information because it's government sales. So to my question, even when I actually read it. And I would strongly encourage the listeners, you probably want to have something beside you when you're reading this thing to kind of help you get through a little bit. So
it's a little dry. Yes.
Okay. But
you mean a cup of coffee then to keep you going. You
go. That's good. Maybe that's excusing cleaning up. That's
right.
So anyway, but I think the key here is that kind of talking about some of the earlier conversations. So from a MythBuster standpoint, yeah, let's just kind of go with that. I'll start with that.
Sure.
That I think there's a public hearing on the 17th of next month, April. So there'll be time for comment, and I'm sure the coalition is going to be a speaker.
Yes.
Or you'll be getting
registered as a speaker. Yep.
Getting information from your members, from the members there of the coalition, and a lot of people are looking through that rule and seeing what the impact is and trying to understand it and see what it would take to implement it from an industry standpoint. But I think, more fundamental, Roger, is, I think the analysis of, or how the analysis is portrayed on how GSA is making these process decisions changes. I mean, it's like when industry can, I think, do something, was it 6 minutes or?
Oh, no, Bill, it was 6 hours.
Oh, geez,
the
6 hours.
So the rule called, just to be clear, the rule calls for the reporting of all transactions under a GSA schedule contract by a GSA schedule contractor, and you're reporting those on a monthly basis, and you got to report like the order number, description of requirement, unit price, total price, manufacturer part number, UPC code if available, all kinds of information. They've got to collect that, all that, and create a system to do that, and then report it to GSA on a monthly basis. That's what the rule calls for, and then as a carrot, and I use that in quotes, it provides that then the tracking customer part of the price reduction clause is not applicable. That's the rule.
That's a key element when you say it implies a tracking customer, but doesn't it give GSA the right to change that?
Well, no, it does eliminate the tracking customer, but you still have the obligations to fill out your commercial sales practices, to continue to monitor it. The GSA can ask for updates of that at any time, can ask for price reductions, that kind of thing. So it actually doesn't really reform much of anything. It just eliminates the one issue about tracking customer. All the other tracking obligations and requirements have not been adjusted to offset, let's say, the new transactional data reporting requirement.
So the six,
that's my quick read of it.
So the 6 hours is per month?
No, 6 hours is the initial cost to implement a system, I guess, for the contractors to set it up to be able to comply with the data requirements. To your point, I guess, I think what the rule says about monthly cost, then it says it would cost 31 minutes a month thereafter to actually, I guess, administer the clause internally to be able to respond and report on a monthly basis.
I'm not a tech guy. It takes me longer than that to program my iPhone. Okay. But the point here is 31 minutes. I mean, I don't know how you, to me, that's virtually impossible to understand that. And I think there was a cost savings of $51 million or $50 million by industry, which is an inference that savings would come over to the government. And it just, I mean, those are the things that I think will be, the public hearing will be a welcome platform to have these kind of discussions. Because just to take the data on the face of the data, GSA won't take industry's data on its face. They want to audit it sometimes. And so I think someone really needs to peel back this, these numbers, because it talked about a third party came up with it. And I think, we're not going to cast doubt on it. We'll cast unknown how it was figured out. So maybe is that a fair way of putting
it? That's fair way, okay, I guess. Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, but the bottom line is, what are you going to do with the data? What are you going to do? Is this going to go in a cloud somewhere? How are you going to archive it? Is it going to be FOIA? Are people going to start FOIAing the data?
Right.
I mean, you're opening up a whole nother area.
Well, then you get into issues of unit pricing on a competition, and that's generally, under the case law, at least the last I knew, is protectable under FOIA. You get into all kinds of questions.
Well, but I mean,
but it's a risk. Yeah, absolutely.
So if GSA,
I think the bigger question is, to your point, is what is I going to use all this data?
Exactly.
I mean, we're talking like literally billions of data points when you stop and think about it, right?
Because and how do you make it? I mean, you basically have fruit cocktail. So how do you get it down to apples and apples, peaches, peaches? It's like you don't know what the requirement is behind the order. It could be a delivery time. It could be a quantity aspect affects pricing. It could be a color. There's so many things can be associated here that to say, yeah, industry, you're right on that. It could be different, but we want to have it so at least we have exposure to it. So what's the value of exposure? But these are part of the, and we're doing all of this for what reason? And industry views some of this information is kind of proprietary for them. That's how they conduct business. So if they turn it over to government, then it can't be proprietary for government because it's government initiated information. So that is it should make it FOIAable.
Okay, Bill. We'll leave that for the leave that for the lawyers to decide, right? what does this tell you about where they're going with the program? Does it inform any I'm just trying to get a sense of the thought process behind this. I mean, there's a lot of discussion in the rule about horizontal pricing comparison and price variance.
Yeah, I think price is the easiest common denominator to say whether we saved money or not. It does not take in the total cost of acquisition. And I think that the government has a responsibility to not go to do a quick identifier, which is price. They have a responsibility to look at total acquisition of cost, Roger. And you've covered a lot of good topics here, from a Mythbusters to category management, contract duplication. There's a significant amount of cleanup opportunity and the ability for government to reduce its internal costs.
Like the total cost of acquisition.
Total right. cost, yeah. Exactly. You mean to that point. And so I think the kind of the ring here, and everybody's being led around here, is when it boils down to price. And I think that I think in the long term, that is not create the opportunity of getting the government, the latest of whatever it is, product or services or technology, and putting a fixed price. And, I know you have your, so you have that opportunity in there.
Yeah. Right, right. And not, let alone, Nick, we didn't even get to talk about what's the impact on small business. Maybe that's for another show, Bill, but we've wrapped up. We've reached the end of the show. I want to thank my guest, Bill Gormley. He's the president of the Gormley Group. He's also the chairman of the Coalition for Government Procurement. And you've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.